Welcome to Gray Area's Artist Spotlight. My name is Lily Moayeri, and I'm delighted to have legendary techno DJ, producer, and label owner Thomas Schumacher on the series. Thomas, welcome. When we spoke before, one of the through threads in your music milestones was how clerks in stores, whether it was record stores or music stores or instrument stores, were helpful in guiding your musical taste, your DJing practice, and your making music. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Well, the thing is, back in the days, gathering information that was just such a challenge. You know, it was before internet, before mobile phones. So, in a way, you always were looking for and depending on human connection and others to help you. And I think the best place that symbolizes this so well were the record stores. Apart from all the social interaction going on there, which I love, but the fact is you show up there and there are just way too many records to buy or to even have the time to listen to. So you needed someone that started to get to know you and understand your taste in music to be like this human filter, to do the pre-selection and help you to get through the core of the records that you might be interested in. And I love that. I think that was such a great setup. And obviously you get to know each other more and more. And then also the other thing that I loved about record stores and shopping there were, especially once I moved here to Berlin, you start to see other DJs, colleagues of yours, and you start to, you know, network and you bring them white labels. And it was just it was kind of a perfect setup and situation. And yeah, as far as instruments, for example, goes in the early 90s, late 80s, That was probably the most complicated bit of all. You know, it was just at times it seemed impossible to figure things out for me. Like, I remember ending up going to like a what do you call these places where you buy like magazines, international magazines,
sure,
for yes, musicians, mm-hmm, but they were all focused on guitars and rock music. So it was just, you know, so it literally some steps took for years, literally, until sometimes you were lucky. You got to know someone who knew someone, and then you ended up being able to call him and set up an appointment. And so slowly you were only able to gather information and understand the process better.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think, you know, when the person in the record store gave you the first record that introduced you to electronic music, which was Depeche Mode's Construction Time Again, and then right, that same record store put the first Acid House 12-inch in your hand, because they're just like, if you like Depeche Mode that much and went down that road,
yeah,
here you are 6, 7, 8 years later, this is what you're going to want to be listening to. And I think that was like perfect timing. And like you say, they get to know you. So they know.
And it's a bit almost like a mentoring going on there, you know, if it's a really great guy working there or girl, you know, and mm-hmm, they figure out that, for example, I'm a very curious person by nature. So I was always like very open-minded, and I think they realized that. And so, yeah, that was almost like a not logical progression for them to show me records and music that was not what I started out with, you know, and say, look, what about this, you know?
Yeah, that makes so much sense. By that same token, also connected to not having enough information, you know, based on like Googling or so forth. Also, you were so young and you really didn't have the funds. You don't know what to buy. You don't know how to use it. But you told me that you feel like that made you better at what you were doing, because it was such an uphill challenge to be able to accomplish things, especially with DJing, because when you realized, okay, I'm making tracks, now I'm going to be a DJ, now I got to buy a DJ setup on top of my music making setup.
I really believe it was a blessing in disguise, you know, because nowadays, whenever I talk to like the young generation that is out there, and, you know, obviously I'm trying to help them as well as much as I can, they are overwhelmed by the sheer amount of information and possibilities. And it was the total opposite to when I started up, you know, and I was forced to make the most out of every synthesizer or drum machine, or like, for example, to go back to the example of the record store, if I only had money for 3 12 inches, I would pick the one that had at least two tracks on it that I can play, not just one. Stuff like that, you know, nowadays people are like, what? You know, but that was the, I think in a way, as much as it felt like a pressure back then, but nowadays I realize it was actually helping me a lot to really dig deep, you know, and make the most out of everything. And as far as gear goes, for example, to really learn how to program synthesizers and stuff like that, and not just go and play some presets, you know.
And also, I remember you telling me the DJ setup you bought wasn't even for DJs. It was just what you could afford. And it took you so long to be able to beat match. So once you actually ended up in a club with a proper setup with techniques, you're like, ah, this is so
Yeah,
easy.
piece of cake. I always wonder back then, because I also remember that DJing in itself, it was not recognized as an art form or a profession. People were just like looking down on you a little bit, taking pity on you. So I wonder, when I went to that store to buy these turntables, if the guy actually really knew what he was doing, because he sold them to me as proper DJ turntables. And it took me a while to kind of understand, there's no way these are DJ turntables. This is impossible, you know. So, but yeah, once I had the chance to then work with professional gear, it made it seem so much easier, for sure.
Wow. And you've had, well, you have Electric Ballroom, your label now, and you've had other labels in the past. Well, another label in the past. I'm not going to try and ruin the German pronunciation. So,
Oh, come on, Spielzeugschallplatten.
okay, slower, Spielzeug
Schallplatten.
Schallplatten.
Yes, that's
Okay,
right.
I feel good about that.
You're right.
So you've had your own labels, but you've also been signed to a major. You've released stuff on other people's independent labels. What are your different experiences with these different modes of putting your music out?
Vastly different, especially the difference between releasing on small or independent labels compared to the major labels. There was a period in my life where I gave it a try, and you know, I had a couple of releases on major labels, and it was an interesting experience, but I was also pretty quickly sure that's not the way I want to do things, you know. It's just a completely different mindset. I think at the end of the day, as much as major labels deal with music, it's a lot about money. And the music is a means to end, you know, it's content, you know. So that wasn't really for me. And working with independent labels is just completely different, you know. I mean, still we try to make a living out of it a little bit at least, but it's much more about artistic vision, you know, and doing things exactly the way you want to, and not caring so much about, for example, the market or whatever. And I found that for me, I have the ultimate freedom of running my own label. That's just for me, it's just perfect like that.
Yeah, and I think you were telling me one of the drawbacks of having releases come out on other people's independent labels, they let you have your artistic vision. That's not the problem. The problem is the amount of time it takes for your record to actually come out. And by then you're like, oh, I'm not playing that record anymore. You
That's
know,
it.
I'm onto like 10 other things.
No, I think this is one for me. That was always something that made our industry or scene so exciting, that it's so in your face and it's immediate. You know, between finishing a track after testing it for a couple of weeks and it being out there like only a couple of weeks. So that's why I also, even like, especially with my label, as much as I love to sign more artists, I'd rather not, because the moment I sign more artists again, then we have the situation where, you know, the schedule is full until like, you know, end of the year, and I don't know. It's just something that is super important for me, that I can just get things out quickly, and so yeah.
Yeah, and you were saying that in order to have your own label, because people would just think, oh, I'll just do my own label and when I'm ready, I'll put something out on it. But you're like, in order for the label to be legit, you have to have like stuff coming out very regularly. Otherwise, people are not really looking for the label and they're not really taking it seriously. And that makes so much sense to me because even though you're in charge, you can't only put out one thing on it.
No, that's it. But it's a real like a thin line you have to, you know. For example, say with a shop like Beatport, what works best there is to have a lot of releases, actually, ideally every 3 to 4 weeks, to me, that is too much. On the other hand, you know, I'd like to have a release on my label every 8 to 12 weeks to give those releases also time to develop, you know, and breathe. So it's a constant, like, you know, making up your mind, like, and deciding between what could be commercially the best idea versus what's best for the artist and the label, you know?
Yeah. You've been through so many different waves of techno being popular and unpopular and splintering off into different genres, subgenres, and then now becoming, well, not now, but for a long time now, it's been so, so popular, so cool. Of course, you live in techno capital of the world, Berlin. But the thing is, you've been doing techno from the beginning, and you never, like, well, you had like your bit of your electro moment. But I never felt like that was something that you're just like, that's it, I'm not doing techno anymore. It's more like you were just like, this is what feels right to me right now. And you're very busy, and you're very, like, your profile has grown more and more and more. What have been your experiences through these waves of techno? I know that's such a long question. It's like, tell me your whole life story.
Different experiences in terms of, like, how can I put it? Well, the first time, for example, I realized that techno was just getting, like, full on popular, like Love Parade Berlin, 1 million people attending. It was on the daily news show. You know, even I was like, oh my God, this is, we're legit officially, you know? So in one way that felt great. On the other hand, immediately you're like, but that's very different from a couple of years ago when it was kind of like a real underground thing, you know? And so you got to wrap your head around that. And then came the time where a couple of years later, all of a sudden, people are like, techno? Oh my God, nah, come on, really? You know? So you got to learn to live with that. And I think at the beginning, when you're not so experienced, it's kind of a bit off-putting. It's or like makes you a bit insecure. You know, you start to question maybe yourself, like, am I doing the right thing here? But over the time, you realize this is actually a normal thing. You know, it's like, things just, it's like all cyclic, you know, it comes in cycles, goes in cycles. But interestingly, yeah, as you said, for a couple of years now, it seems like common sense is techno is cool. Again, it's here to stay. And I'm quite happy about that, to be honest. You know, and the other thing is, we talked about this, techno is such a wide term, you know, and it's, I always say it's like this perfect canvas for people to just project things onto it. And I think that's why nowadays it's just like this, oh, techno, yeah, it's cool, but people mean vastly different things.
When they say techno, yeah, it's true. And I remember you telling me when you were first very young and you were trying to start DJing, and you went to the club in your hometown of Bremen and asked the promoter, can we do some stuff? He's like, techno? No, we only do house here. Absolutely no techno whatsoever. And you did your own party until he came knocking on your door saying, actually, I want you to be a resident here playing techno. And that to me is like the biggest sign of, and that was still underground. It's not like it was popular and overground. He came to you because you were doing something that people were interested in. I think that was really what was going on. It's not so much that all of a sudden he became a techno lover. No. I think he was more like a trend spotter.
That, you know? And I think he probably also realized that I was just totally believing in it, you know? And that's something I've also realized over the last couple of years. It's just, I just always followed my heart. It was not an intellectual decision as much. It was more like, you know, I felt so drawn to it. And especially in times when, you know, when it's maybe not the hottest thing, and where you can also sometimes see people jumping the bandwagon, you know, or doing something completely else, I felt always like, I'm just going to continue to do this. You know, I'm not questioning that in itself. You know, maybe you try explore different roads a little bit, but at the core of myself, I'm a techno DJ and producer, and I love it.
Yeah. Well, it's paid off for you anyway. And I really feel like for those people who just stuck it out and they're like, this is what I do, this is what I play, they've just became more and more defined and more iconic. And I love that. For people that were, let the insecurity of techno's moment of unpopularity take over their own beliefs, those are the ones that I feel kind of like missed out on the boat that they were on to begin with. And it's just like, well, you threw yourself off the boat. You got to stick it out.
No, it's true. I mean, there are some extreme examples. I can think of a couple of producers that's been around for as long as I've been. And for a number of reasons, they never ever changed their sound, which meant for years, sometimes I guess for a whole decade, they were extremely unpopular, but they just stuck to it. And all of a sudden, the tide turns again, you know, and all of a sudden I see them play at Berghain. I'm like, what did you do in the last 10 years? You know, like we kept doing it, you know, we never gave up. It's like, wow, gotta have nerves of steel to do that though, you know. I
It's
think,
true. It's absolutely true.
yeah, for me as a
Absolutely.
producer, my I always I'm so curious, so I can't just reproduce the same thing, you know. It's just in me that I'm always looking for something fresh, so I'm changing quite a lot. Yet I think there's just this typical Schumacher way of producing things, so people recognize that. But others do it differently, and like Jeff Mills, great example. You know, I don't think much has changed in the way Jeff produces or DJs, and it's super iconic, you know. But I don't think it's been always regarded so highly as it is these days again, you know. So
Like you say, nerves of steel to weather that out.
yes.
Okay, I'm going to get into our speed round of questions. These are just fun questions that are not necessarily music related so that we can get to know you a little bit outside of this sphere. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. What's your favorite restaurant where you live and what's your favorite dish there?
My favorite restaurant where I live, so here in Berlin, must be Takumi Nine, a Japanese restaurant specialized in ramen soups. I'm a huge fan of Japanese cuisine and ramen, especially. And my favorite ramen is the one with a miso base. So there you
Ah,
go.
okay. Why does that not surprise me that it's a Japanese restaurant? Yeah, I know you became a little bit of a Japanophile when you were first there, but the thing
Were.
is, I've had Asian cuisine in Berlin, and it's exceptional. It's so good. I think probably my favorite Asian cuisine in the world is in Berlin.
Especially Vietnamese, because traditionally there has always been exchange between Vietnam and East Germany. So lots of Vietnamese people living here and running great restaurants, super
Great
authentic.
restaurants. All right, next one. What is your favorite film or series, TV series or book, and why?
Let's
You don't have to
do
tell me each one, just
one of
whichever
them.
you feel.
Movies,
You
my
can tell
favorite.
me all three.
Let's stick to movies. My by
Okay.
far my favorite director is Martin Scorsese, and I just watched Gangs of New York again. It's Daniel Day-Lewis in it. Fantastic movie. I also like Goodfellas, Casino. But just for me, it's the perfect art of storytelling. No one does it better than Scorsese, and he has such a amazing hand to pick great actors and actresses. So yeah.
I believe he has a new one coming out this year. I just heard about it
Really?
last week. Yeah, because I was listening to a podcast, and one of the actors that was a guest on the podcast plays the wife of the main character, who I believe is Robert De Niro. And I think, is it Robert De Niro? And then also Leonardo DiCaprio is in it. It's going to be interesting. It's based on a true story. So she was saying it was an amazing experience. So you got that to look forward to.
I mean,
What
just to
are
say
the top? Yeah.
that, because he just said, just the fact that he sticks to the same actors is
That too.
super amazing as well, because you can see him throughout his movies and his work getting older and better and better. It's just like you feel like you're just part of this whole universe of Martin Scorsese. So definitely
Yeah.
looking forward to the one that you just spoke about.
Okay, what are the top three things suggested on your Instagram search page? I looked at mine when I was like typing that out, and I was like, I hope nobody asks me mine because this is very strange to me.
A good
Because
question.
I've got Groove is in the Heart's Delight. Groove is in the Heart. Why? I have a lot of Madonna, and I dislike Madonna, so I'm confused about that.
So
And
the search,
then,
when you
yeah,
type
and one
it
more thing that I don't understand. No.
in,
Like, if you just go to search, it suggests a bunch of
the
stuff for you.
suggestions. I see a lot of gear related stuff, keyboards. I'm following a
And
couple
gear related.
of, yeah, like you know, those channels. Then food. And what else? It's interesting now to think about it. Like, what do I see on that page? You know, obviously we look at it a lot. And then obviously also a lot of techno related stuff, like people dancing and raving and stuff like that, shuffle dance stuff. This is what the algorithm I'm interested in. But strangely enough, also a lot of cat videos. And I'm not a cat type of guy. It's just they keep reappearing in my feed. I'm like, why cats? So.
Oh, that's so funny. And also, besides the cat thing, because I'm not a cat person either, besides the cat thing, yours sounds way better than mine. Way better. And I was like, I don't want to look at Madonna, my God. Although she kind of looks like a cat these days. Anyway, moving on. Which clothing designer will we find the most items from in your closet? It can also be a store. It doesn't have to be like a designer necessarily.
Well, I'm not big into designer stuff. So the first thing that springs to mind is what you see is a lot of black in my wardrobe. Like probably 99%. I'm really a t-shirt type of guy. And what you will see a lot is t-shirts. Like, for example, I love just t-shirts with, like, you know, Roland, like keyboard related stuff. Or I just bought myself an Underground Resistant t-shirt and like branded shirts, but it's all music related. I think that's what you, I know that's what you find. And
you have a lot of fucking techno, your own brand.
I have to admit it. And I'm not
ashamed. You can plug your own brand right now.
Yeah. That's it. Exactly.
Like, and those are also black. So
I have them with white fucking techno print, but I also have them now with black on black, which is also pretty cool. So,
That's really going in the deep end. If you weren't doing music, what would you be doing for a living? You started so early that I don't know that you ever had a chance to explore anything else. But you're saying teaching?
Teaching, yeah. I'm definitely teaching what? Probably history.
Ah, I was
really into history in school, and I had great teachers. And so, because I asked that myself a while ago, what would you actually do if you had decided to do something else? And to me, it felt like, and I like the idea of also helping people to grow. It's always something that is close to my heart. So yeah, I guess I would be doing something like that.
That's so great. That's so unexpected for me. Thank you so much for your time, Thomas. It's such a pleasure to speak with you.
Likewise, Lily.
Thank you. Once again, I'm Lily Moayeri for Gray Area Artist Spotlights. Until next time.